Welcome to Championship Weekend on the Pro Football Weekly Podcast. I'm your host, Arthur Arkish. Pleased and so appreciative, as always, that you are with us this week on the show. And this is a big one, no doubt about it. Four teams left standing, and therefore I wanted to get you four guests. Let's get behind the scenes in each of the remaining cities and see what's going on. It is, in fact, a jam-packed show, so not going to waste a lot of time with the intro, but as I always do, a quick reminder to check us out at iTunes and make sure you subscribe to the Pro Football Weekly Podcast while you're there. We would love it if you left us a rating and a comment. All those forms of interaction are helpful to help this show continue to gain traction. And also want to introduce you to our wonderful sponsor, or reintroduce you to our great sponsor, Loot Crate. On a quest for epic gear, housewares, and collectibles this holiday season, Loot Crate offers an epic range of pop culture items for less than $20 a month. Whether you're shopping for the geek in your life, or if you are that geek, Loot Crate is the best surprise you know is coming. Every month there's a different theme and new exclusive items you can only get with Loot Crate. Treat yourself every month or give the gift of geeking out to a friend or loved one. Roll up your sleeves and get ready to celebrate some of pop culture's most put-together franchises. February's hands-on theme is Build and features Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, Batman, Lego Dimensions, and Tetris. And, as always, our monthly t-shirt and pin. You have until the 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific to subscribe and receive that month's crate. And when the cutoff happens, that's it. It's over. Make sure to head to www.lootcrate.com/Shaw and enter the code Shaw, S-H-A-W, to save $3 off any new subscription today. All right, and thank you once again to Loot Crate for doing what they do. And without further ado, I do want to thank our four guests that are coming on, but I guess I'll kind of do so one at a time. And we are going to start in Green Bay and bring on a Packers writer, Wes Hodkowitz, is our first guest today. Wes is a friend of the program, and I believe it is in his first year, actually, covering the Packers for the team website, but we'll confirm that in a moment. So without further ado, as I mentioned, let's bring on Wes and see what's going on with him.
How you doing, Arthur?
I am doing excellent. Thank you so much for taking a few minutes today. And if everyone doesn't already know, which they should, you can follow Wes, who is a writer at the Packers website. Find him on Twitter at Wes Hod. And also make sure you are, of course, checking out all his work at Packers.com. Wes, tell me if I have this right. I want to say this is year one for you in the transition to writing for the team, no?
That is correct. Yes, that is accurate.
Okay, so, you know, if it isn't already, two more wins, and this one's going to be pretty tough to top for you, I would think.
Yeah, it's, I mean, you go back, since I jumped on the beat full-time in 2012, there's been some really interesting runs. You go back to 2013 and, the collarbone incident, and every other week, I think we were asking Rodgers how he felt.
Right.
2014, they get to the NFC title game, and everybody knows how that ended. And then, you know, you go to last year, and the multiple Hail Marys the last month of the season. This one, I don't know if you'll ever be able to top 2013 in terms of just being probably the most all over the place with everything that happened. But this has been quite a season to cover. It's something else.
Yeah, I believe it. It's been a lot of fun to watch, certainly from the outside as well. And Wes, I'll just kind of launch right in. Everyone's talking, you know, Matt Ryan is pretty much locked up his MVP award, voted MVP by the AP, and set an NFL record this year by finding 15 different Falcons for touchdowns. I was doing the numbers last night. It looks like Aaron Rodgers is at 10, but maybe sort of the epitome of Rodgers' resourcefulness actually happened in the first Atlanta game, no? With all his receivers down, he's finding Trevor Davis, Geronimo Allison, Jeff Janis for scores. Is it going to have to be that way again this week? The injury report is a little scary looking for Green Bay.
Yeah, I mean, that was the thing about that Atlanta game. If you go back and look at the injury report on that, I mean, they had seven guys who were all like key contributors both to the offense and defense,
right,
and they weren't playing in this game. And the biggest one, I think, was probably Ty Montgomery. Missed that game with an illness when I think a lot of people externally were expecting him to play. So that's where you saw Geronimo Allison get his first career touchdown. That's where their fifth-round rookie, Trevor Davis got in the end zone for the first time. Rodgers had to make a lot of those pieces work, and really, and obviously there was a couple more losses after that, and they had to find themselves offensively, but I think that was kind of the start of figuring out what this offense was going to be without Eddie Lacy, and you know, kind of figuring out where it was going to go in the passing game as Jordy Nelson got more comfortable. So that game really does stand out to me as a turning point in the season. I think, you know, talking to a lot of guys in the locker room over the last month, they feel like the big change for them happened in that Washington game. Mm-hmm. But I think offensively, you can start to really tie in some of those things of what they did against Atlanta and how that kind of evolved through the course of the season.
Yeah, it was an exciting game. I believe there were 7 lead changes, 33-32 final, kind of came down to who had the ball last. That was, of course, Matt Ryan and Mohamed Sanu getting it done late. So I would anticipate another high-scoring back-and-forth affair. Is that kind of the way you see this one likely playing out, Wes?
Yeah, I mean, that's what it looks like on paper, so naturally it'll probably end up being a 10-7 game.
Right.
with how the NFL goes. But, yeah, I mean, you're looking at this whole playoffs in general, when you look at, you know, Ben Roethlisberger, Tom Brady, Matt Ryan playing the way he is right now, and Aaron Rodgers, it's a quarterback-driven league, and I think you're seeing the cream of the crop have kind of come back up to the top this season with how this has worked out. For Ryan's perspective, I think you really got to give him a lot of credit. Obviously, Kyle Shanahan and everything people have said about him, the assistant of the year now, I think he was named these past couple days. The offense and how effective they are, the highest scoring unit in the league, you know, most producing in terms of yardage, in really only having 11 takeaways the entire season. It's incredible what they've done. Aaron Rodgers, these last 8-9 games now for him, I think it's right around 122 passer rating, only 2 giveaways with a fumble and an interception. I'm really interested to see that aspect of it, because I think when you look at both these defenses, they have been able to take the ball away in the second half of the season, but just how many opportunities are you going to get?
Right.
That I think is going to be one of the key underlining kind of one of the biggest keys to this game.
Yeah, no doubt. Chatting with Wes Hodkiewicz. You can find his work at Packers.com. Find him on Twitter at Wes Hod. I don't want to look back too much because we only have a handful of minutes here, but I do have to quickly ask, 3rd and 20, you know, 7 seconds left. It's obviously going to go down in NFL history as one of the great plays. I got such a kick out of the post-game interview and Aaron Rodgers in a very Aaron Rodgers sort of way, being asked if that was his most athletic or best play, however it was worded. He almost seemed appalled by the line of questioning. Did he give another answer to better, more impressive plays, more clutch plays throughout his career?
No, I mean, that it's so funny, and McCarthy talked about it this week. I mean, that team has been spoiled by how great Aaron Rodgers is, and it's so tough. I mean, it's easy in a lot of cases when someone has a run like Rodgers has had over this last 2 months to walk into a locker room and ask guys if this is the best stretch he's ever had. But when Rodgers has done it this well for this long,
right,
it is difficult to say that, because he's had great stretches. He's had hundreds of throws without interceptions before in his career. But I think the biggest thing is with Rodgers is where this team was at, 4-6, not knowing which direction the season was going to go, and his response to that. That, I think, is really what has set this year apart, which has been the biggest, really, it's hard to even quantify how well he's played during this whole performance. And ultimately, that's what's helped the Packers get to this stage and to this level. And right now, how things have shaken out, I mean, there's a lot of playmakers on this team, but it all starts and stops with Aaron Rodgers, and right now there's few better.
Yeah, no doubt. That's part of, you know, a huge part, obviously, of what is making Sunday's game so appealing, should make it so exciting. And I think what separates these two, because Matt Ryan's numbers are every bit as video game-like, maybe even a tad better than Aaron Rodgers is in some regards. But I think it's the way that Green Bay has been forced to overcome so much adversity along the way, that in the way that they've ridden, you know, rode into the postseason, that it feels like there's so much discussion stemming from Rodgers. But Wes, let's talk a little bit. And I don't even know, I know you work for the team, and certainly we're not getting any inside info here. I'm not asking for it. Do you have a feeling on any of these receivers? I know Jordy Nelson, it seems like he hasn't been cleared for contact yet, but it has to be encouraging that he's at least been limited. That's more than we can say for what, Davante Adams, Geronimo Allison, and Jeff Janis the past couple days, or just the first two?
Yeah, I think Janis is going to end up being okay. He played through that quad injury last week. He was limited so far this week, but I think, you know, when it's all said and done, he should be out there. The other three are question marks, but I will say this, that, you know, Jordy Nelson talked with the media on Wednesday and really shed some light on what he experienced going back in that game against the Giants where he suffered the broken ribs, mentioning that it was the worst pain he's ever felt in his life. But the one positive was when he went to the hospital, there were no additional internal damage. It was strictly the ribs. So we'll have to see. We don't really know what the, you know, severity of it is. Only he, and I'm sure the team doctors have a full picture of it. You know, Jared Cook did say yesterday, or I should say on Thursday, about the fact that, you know, he had been able to play through cracked ribs before, but it was more of a hairline fracture type deal. So every case is different, and they're going to have to figure out what the best case scenario is for Nelson. But, I mean, again, like you said, it was positive that he was able to at least get back out on the field, do some non-contact stuff, you know, get his catches down. He talks so much about how important, you know, being able to stay in that rhythm is to his own game. So that was positive. And with Davante Adams and Geronimo Allison, it's going to be a wait-and-see approach here. They don't practice. Their final practice will be Saturday. So we'll see exactly what their designations are for them. My gut tells me they'll probably end up putting him down as questionable, but, you know, only time will tell. But all three of those guys are so important to this team, and especially Allison, the way he stepped up when Randall Cobb was injured with his ankle issues. So that's going to be the biggest thing here going into this game is who are they going to have and what do they have to do to make up for, you know, who isn't out there every play.
And it's sort of weird that it's, again, it's like that again. Last time there was no Montgomery, no Cook, no Cobb on the other side of the ball, no Rollins and Randall. So it's just amazing that this has kind of repeated itself in that regard. But we got to spend at least a couple minutes talking about the defense. And, well, I guess I want to ask both about Randall Cobb and Julius Peppers. It looks to me like the Packers are benefiting from the way they sort of handled those guys with kid gloves, Randall inactive in the final two games, although I know he was hurt, and then with Julius Peppers kind of having him on a pitch count, it looks like now they've been able to kind of fully unleash him when the stakes are at the highest. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I think you got to give Mike McCarthy and that coaching staff, training staff, a lot of credit for what they did with Randall Cobb, because those are important games, Arthur. I mean, you go back to the Lions game, even though they were in, that was still for the NFC North title. The loser was going to be going to Seattle.
Yep.
You look at the other scenarios that could have played out the week before that, how important that game was to keeping the playoff hopes alive when they took on the Vikings, who had beaten them earlier in the season. So to go those two games without Cobb, seeing the big picture with him, I mean, you saw him come back against the Giants and put up some big numbers in a game that they really needed him when they didn't have Jordy Nelson. So, I thought they took a really smart approach with him. I don't have it in front of me right now. I don't even think he was on the injury report this week. So, looking good for him. Julius Peppers is a different area. He's never really been hurt in his 3 years with the Packers. He's never been on the injury report with anything, but they have been resting him on Wednesdays for the last almost 2 months now. And that has paid dividends for them. And him having, I think it's 4 sacks now in the last 5 or 6 games, being able to make that impact and really those big plays when they needed them. I think that's what really separated Peppers during the stretch, during a time in which Nick Perry's dealing with a hand injury and has had to wear a club, Clay Matthews dealing with the shoulder. A lot of areas that they've been stressed, and fortunately for the Packers, Julius Peppers has really been that rock that I think everybody's kind of grown accustomed to him being for the last 15 years.
Yeah, he's a treat to watch, obviously. I'm kind of very quietly maybe rooting for the underdogs just so we can see the two old guys and the rematch, obviously the Super Bowl from a few years ago. Amazing, the level of play that Peppers and Harrison have not only sustained but seemingly kind of ratcheted up in the postseason has been awesome. Wes, we're almost out of time. I do have to ask, though, it seems to me Micah Hyde is going to continue to be a vital player here in this game. Just the way you look at the matchups, what he's done so recently has been really impressive. Is he a guy that could be a big factor in trying to cover these Falcons backs out of the backfield in addition to the young linebackers? Because it seems to me outside of Julio Jones, that has to be one of the Packers' biggest concerns. They didn't see Tevin Coleman the first time around.
Right, yeah. I think when it probably all comes down to it, I think you're going to see Joe Thomas. He was an undrafted linebacker out of South Carolina State in 2014.
Right.
He's been the dime guy for them the last couple seasons. He's also moved into almost an every down role with the injury to Blake Martinez. I think you're going to see him probably getting the call a lot against Freeman and Coleman, but Hyde certainly figures into that as well. The thing is with Hyde, and anyone that's paid attention to the NFC North and particularly the Packers, I mean, he is that jack of all trades kind of player. And I think sometimes those guys can, you know, get the wrong label and probably not get the recognition they deserve. But as a fifth round pick out of Iowa in 13, the job that Micah Hyde has done for the secondary for the last 4 years now, you really can't say enough about it. Played a nickel position in 2013 as a rookie when Casey Hayward dealt with his hamstring issues. In 2014, he learned safety and split those duties with HaHa Clinton Dix until Clinton Dix took over that role. And ever since then has been really used wherever. In the slot, he had to play the boundary a little bit in Detroit after the injury to Rollins. So he has stepped up wherever they've needed him to be. And, yeah, I mean, there'll be times where he's going to be on tight ends. There'll be times where I'm guessing he'll be on Taylor Gabriel. And there could even be times where he's going to be going up against those running backs. But the thing about Hyde that you really probably saw in that game against Dallas, that interception that he had was just – it embodied. It was just a microcosm of his entire career. Just the study habits that he has, the intelligence. That was really the best, I think, example of what he's brought to this team for the last 4 years. And if the Packers are going to be successful against the Falcons and Matt Ryan, he's going to have to be a big part of it.
Yeah, such an instinctive interception and something I know they'll be looking for again with Matt Ryan having so much flexibility at the line of scrimmage on some of those RPO plays. Wes, we are about out of time, and I'm going to put you on the spot, but I don't know if you're able to do this. Do you pick these games, or as a team employee, you probably do not? I'm not sure how that works.
You know what? Yeah, I haven't really picked them too much anymore. Even when I was at the paper, I didn't really like doing it just because there's so many things that are involved with it. But what I will say, Arthur, is when you look at this matchup, and I kind of alluded to it earlier, mm-hmm. I think it is going to come down to takeaways and whoever does get that big turnover, because the way that Ryan has protected the ball this season, the way that Rodgers has protected the ball his entire career,
right.
I think it's going to be one of those games where it is who blinks first. And if the Packers defense can get those big plays that they've gotten over the last month and a half, you know, just being able to kind of grind out a few here and there, and, you know, whether it's just a timely third down stop or a pass deflection, a sack, or, you know, a takeaway, I think the way that the Packers offense has played this year, you know, regardless of who's available, this is definitely a winnable game for them. From Atlanta's perspective, though, they're on their home turf. They're going to have a super energized crowd in the last game at the George Dome. I'm really excited to see it. I think it's going to be an incredibly entertaining game to watch Ryan and Rodgers do battle.
Yeah, well, I'm excited to see it. I'm excited you get to go down there and cover it, and it should be a lot of fun. So, Wes, we are out of time. I am so appreciative of you joining the Pro Football Weekly podcast, friend of the program. Always great having you on, and enjoy the action. Enjoy the weekend. Let's circle back and talk about it soon, I hope.
All right, definitely, man. Thanks for having me.
It is our pleasure. That is Wes Hockowitz of Packers.com on the Pro Football Weekly podcast.
All right, and that was awesome stuff from Wes, as always. And if you're not already doing so, you should be following him on Twitter at Wes Hod. Always great stuff coming from that account, and great insight into the Packers, as does our next guest provide similarly for the Falcons. I don't know if that was a very good transition, but you'll have to excuse me. A lot of excitement and a lot to get to on the PFW podcast today. And next up is Aaron Freeman. He covers the Falcons for the Locked On Falcons podcast. You can find his work on Twitter at FalcFans. And Aaron was nice enough, actually in a pinch, I kind of reached out last second, but Aaron was nice enough to take a few minutes and join the Pro Football Weekly podcast. And time to share that interview with you right now.
Should be a pretty cool send-off to the Georgia Dome, that's for sure. Let me ask you, Aaron, did you foresee anything like this this time last year, the Falcons just wrapping up a disappointing second half and Matt Ryan coming off what, his worst season in years, I'd have to say?
Absolutely not. I sort of expected this coming into this 2016 season, the Falcons to sort of have a repeat of what we saw last season, which was a little bit too much inconsistency on both sides of the ball. But this offense has really blossomed into obviously one of the best of all time, at least based off of the production they've had this year.
Yeah, it's been awesome. You know, Kyle Shanahan today named the PFWA Assistant Coach of the Year. On Thursday, Matt Ryan, one day earlier, named the MVP by PFWA, both well-deserved honors. Aaron, I didn't realize, I knew that a key to Matt Ryan's success was spreading the football around. I did not realize he found 15 different Falcons for touchdowns this season. That is amazing. This has really evolved past just being the Julio Jones and Matt Ryan show, hasn't it?
Absolutely. I posted on my Twitter account, FalcFans, earlier today, looking at Julio's game-by-game log this year, and you look at his production, and basically, when you break it down by the results of the game's wins and losses, the more Julio gets the ball, typically the more likely the Falcons are to lose the game. I think the record is 5-0 when Julio has under 60 or less yards, and I think they're 1-3 when he has over 120 yards or something like that.
Wow.
And the success they've had this year has been primarily because it isn't the Julio Jones show. If they get too focused on Julio Jones, then it's the Taylor Gabriels and the Mohamed Sanus, along with Tevin Coleman and Devontae Freeman, that really sort of gash teams. And then when you try to spread things out a little too thin, then you leave a guy by the name of Julio Jones open a couple of times, because we know he can sort of take advantage of some softer coverages.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Like you said on your Twitter handle, kind of counterintuitive, that stat. But Aaron, you know, back in week 8, let's rewind for a minute. An exciting game. I think there were 7 lead changes. Both offenses a little shorthanded. That was the Mohamed Sanu show, if memory serves. I know that he and Ryan hooked up frequently on that game-winning drive. Do you kind of have a feeling if there's someone else that's going to step up this time around, and will that be necessary with Julio Jones's, what is a toe injury he's dealing with still, correct?
Yeah, I think it will be necessary. One of the things that's been an issue throughout the season, I think Julio Jones basically been injured the entire year. Yeah. Obviously, because of the team's success, it hasn't been that big of an issue, and as I just quoted on some of the stats, they've been able to overcome it. I think this game really is sort of setting up for Tevin Coleman to have a really big difference. He did not play in that Week 8 game.
Right.
The Falcons' running game was sort of kept in check, partially because Green Bay was able to build an early lead in that game, as well as their front seven doing a pretty good job of holding Devontae Freeman in check. But I think Coleman's ability to run the football and to be a dynamic threat in the passing game, particularly against some less than stellar Packers inside linebackers, could really create some mismatches for the Falcons that really favor them this week.
Yeah, I think so too. That was the matchup that I highlighted in my preview of Pro Football Weekly, the Freeman and Coleman split backfield against guys like Jake Ryan and Blake Martinez and Joe Thomas, of course. Aaron Freeman, find him on Twitter at FalcFans, talking obviously Packers, Falcons, NFC title game. We'll get back to the offense in a minute, but I think sort of the lesser told story of Atlanta's success, at least of late, has been Dan Quinn's defense. What's making it go? I know they're young. I know they're fast. What's been kind of the maybe hidden key or two that's helped this offense really gel in the second half of the season?
I think probably if you're trying to build a narrative about this, it's been really the sort of play of the secondary in the absence of Desmond Trufant.
Right.
Losing a player like Trufant's caliber, mm-hmm. most people thought it was going to be a huge blow, but the secondary, while is not as good as it would be if Trufant was in the lineup, they have been able to sort of compensate. You've gotten young players like Keanu Neal's played exceptionally well down the stretch. Also, you have your young linebackers and Deion Jones and Devondre Campbell, both rookies as well, not making as many rookie mistakes. The Falcons' pass rush has been much better in the second half of the season as well. So I think it's a lot of factors, but I do think their success hinges more on solid play in the secondary more so than stellar play in the front.
I like Neal's running mate, too. He comes downhill pretty fast. Who's the safety that plays opposite Neal?
Ricardo Allen.
He's a hitter, right? He seems like he brings some energy out there.
Yeah. Dan Quinn's hallmark is always playing fast and physical, and I think the Falcons' defense has been able to play that way a lot more down the stretch.
All right, so obviously, the pass rush is going to face a taller order this week against the Packers' offensive line as opposed to Seattle's. I don't really envision Brooks Reed taking advantage of David Bakhtiari the way he did George Fant a week ago. But what do you think? I mean, who's been, and I know they just lost Adrian Claiborne. Last week we saw Reed fill the bill, but who else kind of helps out to sort of take a little bit of the pressure off Vic Beasley? What do you think Dwight Freeney's been able to do, and who are one or two other guys that maybe we need to know about up front?
I think it's going to be interesting because Claiborne was the player that had the most effect on the pass rush in an earlier matchup with the Packers earlier this season. I think it's going to have to be Vic Beasley taking the bulk of it, but I do think Dwight Freeney has been able to flash here and there, and I think if anybody's going to be the guy other than Vic Beasley, then I think it's going to have to be Dwight Freeney, just because he's got a little bit veteran savvy and he might be able to bust out a couple of spin moves against Bakhtiari this week.
So when the Packers went to Atlanta, Aaron, back in Week 8, they did not have Randall Cobb, they didn't have Jared Cook, they didn't have Ty Montgomery, a lot of missing pieces, and also I think they were down like their top three corners as well. So that was a shorthanded group. We mentioned Atlanta was without Tevin Coleman and a couple other guys as well. Aaron Rodgers got out of the pocket a bunch that day, 60 rushing yards. What do you think the Falcons do better to ensure that the game's great improviser isn't making those off-schedule plays and hurting the Falcons with his legs?
I think that's where a player like Beasley is going to come in handy.
Okay.
I know down the stretch this season, particularly in games against San Francisco with Colin Kaepernick and as well with Seattle, they tried to use Beasley a little bit to spy, not having him sort of pin his ears back and get straight up field and sort of linger. And whenever the quarterback tried to get out of the pocket, he's been exceptionally good at sort of chasing that guy down, had a sack against Kaepernick that way. I think that's going to be a way that the Falcons try to do that again with Rodgers this week. I do also think they'll try to dial up a few more blitzes and hopefully can sort of keep him contained to the pocket as well.
And do you think there's a concern that kind of the youth that they have on defense is kind of both a blessing and a curse against someone as experienced as Rodgers? Maybe those young linebackers, a young safety, maybe perhaps being out of place. Have we seen more often than not that they've kind of known where they're supposed to be? Or do you think that's maybe a lingering concern in the back of Dan Quinn's mind this week as well?
I think it has to be. Anytime you play a quarterback as good as Aaron Rodgers, you need to be a very disciplined and well-positioned defense. You know, he's going to create havoc, and you know, those chaotic plays, those off-structure plays, as they're often termed, are where Rodgers thrives. And I think when you have a young defense, they can be a little bit more prone to doing that. I think they've been better as of late, but it's by no means to a degree where it's been amazing. There was a couple of times against Seattle last week where players like Doug Baldwin and Paul Richardson were able to get behind the defense. A couple of times Wilson was able to overthrow them and sort of save them from giving up a big play. But you imagine that if Rodgers is typical Aaron Rodgers, he's going to be able to hit on those throws, and that does give you a little bit of pause in terms of this defense being able to slow him down.
And Aaron, just spending a couple more minutes here with Aaron Freeman, find him on Twitter at FalcFans, also the co-host of the Locked On Falcons podcast. That's a fun Locked On network I'm also a part of. And Aaron, let me ask you, just getting back to Matt Ryan, we'll kind of finish where we started and the Ryan-Shanahan synergy. What's impressed you the most about the turnaround, and kind of as a follow-up or second part to that, what has you most convinced that Ryan is ready for his second NFC title game and ready to make his first Super Bowl appearance this time around?
Well, I think it's related to the things that we talked about earlier with their ability to spread the ball around. I think the big issue, at least from my perspective, with Matt Ryan last year, is he was hyper-focused on Julio Jones because he was the only receiver he really trusted.
Mm-hmm.
There was a bunch of new guys in last year, like guys like Justin Hardy and Leonard Hankerson and Jacob Tammy, and he just didn't really have the trust with those guys that he seems to have with a bunch of those same players today. Obviously not Hankerson, but they've brought in new faces like Sanu, like Aldrick Robinson, like Taylor Gabriel, and I think he's been able to show an uncanny trust in those guys and willingness to throw the ball up and let those guys make plays that he just didn't have last year. And I think with him being confident that his receivers are going to be able to make the catches and make the plays, it's allowed him to play a little bit more freely, and we've seen the results.
We're here in Chicago. The Bears lost Adam Gase this past offseason, and the drop-off to Dowell Loggins proved to be quite severe. Potentially similar situation. It looks like Shanahan's on the way out. Is there concern that some of the magic that this group has sort of conjured this year could be lost if Shanahan splits the scene, or not if, but when he heads to San Francisco?
Yeah, I think that it's only realistic to have that concern. I think the Falcons are hoping that they can win a Super Bowl, and then that concern won't be as much because they'll have a Lombardi trophy in their trophy case that they can, anytime they get down on themselves, they can just go back and look at that.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Aaron, do you have a favorite Georgia Dome memory at all? Kind of putting you on the spot with this one.
Typically, whenever I'm in North Carolina, but typically when I make the trip down to Atlanta to the Georgia Dome, the Falcons do not inspire me with great memories. So I can't specifically name one personally for me, but I think against the Chicago Bears a couple of years ago in 2008, wasn't that in the Georgia Dome where they had that last second field goal that won them the game?
I think so. Yeah, that sounds right.
I think that was in the Georgia Dome. I hope it was in the Georgia Dome. But that was probably the first time I was like, there's something changing in Atlanta. That was Matt Ryan's rookie year, and I think that was the first indicator that at least most of the next 8 years would go a lot more favorably than previous years did.
All right, very good. On the way out, I want to get a pick. I will quickly add my favorite Georgia Dome memory, I believe, had to be going down to the SEC championship game. And although my Missouri Tigers were on the losing side of the equation, watching them and Auburn go back and forth a handful of years ago, I think it was like 51-45 or something crazy like that. That was a pretty fun game to take in, and one of actually several times I've been in the Georgia Dome. So a fun, loud environment. I'd imagine it's going to be a factor Sunday. And Aaron, on the way out, I'll put you on the spot once more. Do you have a feeling which way this one goes? What's your pick for this one?
Yeah, I think I have a little bit more confidence in the Falcons offense going against the Packers defense than the Packers defense against the Falcons offense. But I think I'll give the Falcons the benefit of the doubt. I might be a little biased on that one. But I think it'll be a shootout, something along the lines of 38-35, down to the wire sort of game, back and forth, similar to the last one. But I think the Falcons will find a way to win it again.
All right, very good. That is Aaron Freeman. You can find him on Twitter at FalcFans, also on the Locked On Network, co-host of Locked On Falcons. Aaron, we appreciate your time today, and enjoy the game Sunday. Let's do it again soon, okay?
All right, I appreciate you having me on. Thanks.
All right, yeah, it's our pleasure. That is Aaron Freeman once again.
All righty, so we have taken a close look at the NFC title game, and it should be a fun one. That'll kick off the afternoon at 2 p.m. Central on Sunday. The nightcap, of course, will be held in Foxborough, where the Steelers come to town. And in order to break down these Steelers and Patriots, I have two more great guests, both frequent Pro Football Weekly contributors. And I figure we'll go ahead and stick with the visiting team first and talk with Jim Wexel of Steel City Insider. Jim, another friend of the program, and make sure you're checking out his stuff at ProFootballWeekly.com. He's one of my favorite contributors, and always have a lot of fun chatting with him. So let's take a listen and hear what Jim thinks of the Steelers heading to Foxborough looking for a huge upset.
Jim Wexler can find his work, of course, on Steel City Insider, also a frequent contributor at ProFootballWeekly.com, and look him up on Twitter at Jim Wexel. Jim, let's talk a little bit of Steelers Patriots. You wrote a great column this week on the site about a third option needing to emerge for Ben Roethlisberger for the Steelers to pull off an upset for the ages. Tell our listeners a little bit more about what you mean.
Well, you know, the Patriots are going to take away, I assume, Le'Veon Bell.
Yep.
Not that they'll completely take him away, but they'll probably do a better job than most. They are the third-ranked run defense. Per game, eighth against, per carry. An elite run defense.
Mm-hmm.
And you would assume they'll shade Antonio Brown. So the safety's over the top of him. That's two guys on AB, the rest of the gang on Le'Veon. And who emerges? You know, all the great triplets. You know, this is a great triplet here, Roethlisberger, AB, and Le'Veon.
Right.
Troy Aikman and those guys, they had Alvin Harper. Peyton Manning and his running back and Marvin Harrison, they had Reggie Wayne.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's always another great guy, another option. Well, this team used to have Heath Miller, used to have Martavis Bryant. Now it's got, wow, seventh-round draft picks, undrafted free agents, a fifth-round tight end, a concussed tight end, all kind of question marks. Kobe Hamilton was cut seven times. So one of those guys has to emerge. You might be able to beat the Dolphins with their ravaged secondary,
right,
or the Chiefs, you know, their limited offense. But wow, you're going into New England. I think you're going to need another option, and one of those guys has to step forward.
Well, Jim, let's start with the guy who was paid to do just that. Unfortunately, hasn't been able to stay on the field, Ladarius Green. I saw he got in a limited practice Wednesday, I believe. We're taping here on Thursday. How big of a long shot is it? I mean, I assume he's still in the concussion protocol, so that would be, of course, the first hurdle to clear for Ladarius, correct?
Yes, he's still in a concussion protocol, and he is a long shot.
Okay.
To put it at best, yeah. You're going to have to look for another option there.
Okay, so who's the most likely guy?
Who's next on your list?
Well, you did a great job of breaking down what everyone is meant to this team, and you know, there's been the timely contributions from Kobe Hamilton, Eli Rogers supposed to be a slot guy, kind of forced to the outside. Jesse James sort of has done what's been asked of him, but hasn't really been a big splash play guy. So is there a trend here? Is there anyone with an upward trajectory to where you feel like maybe they could go out and make a name for themselves in the biggest game of their life?
Well, I would have to put my money on Eli Rogers. He mm-hmm. has, I believe, I haven't looked at his stats. I believe he's in the 40 catch range, which is pretty good for a guy who, this is his first year. He's not a rookie. He was on IR all of last year. He came out this year. The unique thing about Eli, he was undrafted. He's out of Louisville. Teddy Bridgewater's childhood friend. They played high school together. They went to Louisville together. He was, he was Teddy's safety valve. You know, yep. He was his spot guy.
Mm-hmm.
And Eli was not big enough, fast enough to be an outside guy there. So he was a slot guy, and he learned. He learned how to be a slot guy, as opposed to all these guys that come out. For instance, I use Antoine Randle. Well, he was a quarterback, but
right.
That's not a good example. But another wide receiver who has moved to the slot because he's smaller and doesn't have the knowledge that Eli has as a four-year college slot receiver.
Right.
So he was undrafted because of his measurables, but he really understands the position. And he has nifty moves, and Roethlisberger and him have a decent chemistry. It's still only 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't drop. It's hard to call what happened to him at the goal line against Kansas City a drop. He was open, and Ben threw it a bit behind him, and he turned and didn't make the catch. He got his hands on it. I was talking to him today. He said he learned from that, you know, and that was not a bad thing. That was a good thing. But these are the kind of just misses they're having
sure.
with their secondary and tertiary options.
Sure.
But Eli, he's a guy. He is unflappable. He is not nervous about this. He is looking at this as an opportunity to become what you said. You know, for him to become that known guy.
Right.
And this is the stage for him, so he would be the best bet.
Okay. Jim, let me ask you, you talk about what Eli has kind of learned from mistakes or whatever may have happened. I'd be remiss if I didn't ask. You're there on the scene. Antonio Brown, did he learn from his silliness in the postgame locker room? I know we're several days removed from it now, but it's the first chance I've had to talk to you. Just your thoughts on what happened and if there are going to be any further reverberations beyond what we've already seen.
Well, you know, the coach handled it perfectly.
He did.
And Antonio was distraught, and he gave his mea culpas yesterday. And, if there are any Facebook Live fans out there, he left you there's a possibility this could return. I don't see this as a distraction. I'm the only guy in the world that thinks that way. Even the Pittsburgh guys think this is some kind of distraction because Mike Tomlin was so distressed about
mm-hmm.
it and
mm-hmm.
Antonio was so sad about it. But I just don't see it being a true distraction. They're practicing. All they had to deal, the only thing extra they had to do was talk about, answer that question in the time allotted that they for them to answer questions.
Right.
I don't see it being a distraction. He is known as a bit of a space cadet on this team. and nobody was surprised by any of this.
Okay.
I don't want to say nobody's surprised that he streamed his coach's post-game talk. Nobody's surprised that, it's an AB thing. And so this was a violation, but really, how bad of a violation is it? Yeah. I don't know. I mean, how much more emotionally charged can the Patriots be?
Yeah.
You know, they'll look, if they win, they'll point back to it and say some of it helped them, and it'll just be, you know, talk. I really don't see it helping the Patriots or hurting the Steelers.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you, Jim. I don't think the Patriots need any extra motivation. Clearly, the Steelers don't need any, anything else to overcome or whatever. It's all in front of both of these teams Sunday. It's going to be a ton of fun. I want to ask you about the pass rush and James Harrison. He may be the most dominant defender in the playoffs. It has been truly remarkable. But quickly, before I do, Jim, just Le'Veon Bell, have you ever seen a runner on this type of an 8 or 9 game stretch? And how much help? We talk a lot about Le'Veon. Are we talking enough about the offensive line and what they're doing for him?
I don't think so. And
I
remind them of that. You know, yeah. I get brownie points with these guys by telling them, hey, nobody pays attention to you guys. And so they like me right now. And but, you know, this reminds me of the 2005 Steelers line. You've got a superstar guard in David DeCastro wearing the same number as Alan Faneca.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a great center, Marquise Pouncey and Jeff Hardings. You've got a highly drafted right tackle. Marcus Gilbert is not getting the attention he deserves. Another great job on Justin Houston. Last year he went 2 games in the last 3 or 4 with Von Miller, shut him out. And Von Miller went on to become the most dynamic pass rusher in the Super Bowl. Marcus Gilbert shut him down. Khalil Mack shut him down. All the top pass rushers are on that side. And Marcus Gilbert, I think, is the best right tackle. I don't understand this Jack Conklin stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I haven't watched the Titans play this year. So, but he is a rookie. Marcus Gilbert is an established pro shutting down the top guys.
Yeah.
And then you have Ramon Foster. However you feel about Pro Football Focus's ratings, they do keep an eye on every player, every play. They have Ramon Foster and Marcus Gilbert rated the number one lineman on this team. So Ramon Foster's holding it down at left guard. Then at left tackle, you've got a 6'9", 330-pound war hero, a fearless Army Ranger who's just getting it, Alejandro Villanueva. He is the project of the bunch. You know, he's the guy you can help if there's one guy that needs help, but lately he hasn't needed it. It's all coming alive for him. The X's and O's now mean something. He can see it in 3D. It's all working for him now, and he's really coming on like gangbusters. So all 5 of them. You know, if they still had Heath Miller, you know, not to take away from Jesse James, who's becoming a solid, serviceable, all-around tight end in his second
right.
year.
Mm-hmm.
But they really, you know, they really miss having the true blocking tight end out there.
Sure. It's been fun to watch, whether it was a Pouncey out front of Bell or even Villanueva out pulling in front of Bell. Just a lot of fun to watch those guys in concert. And then you have an artist like Bell behind them. Great stuff. Jim, we only have a couple minutes left, unfortunately, but I do want to turn to the defense quickly. And James Harrison, I don't know what else you can even say about the guy. Again, I think he's been the most dominant defender in the playoffs. Bud Dupree has also definitely been very impactful. But what do you think about the blueprint that maybe perhaps Romeo Crennel and the Texans identified with the interior pressure attacking David Andrews in the middle of that New England offensive line? Do you think that's something that Pittsburgh and Keith Butler will try and replicate to get Tom Brady out of sorts again?
Absolutely. And you know, that's been a thing since the Giants. That's what the Giants have excelled at. That's why the Giants give them such trouble pouring
right.
up the middle. So, you know, the Javon Hargrave, the rookie, is in the middle. Stephon Tuitt has just gotten so much better. He's going to come up the middle. They'll bring Dupree up the middle. Shazier, Timmons, they can blitz. You know, last time they played the Patriots, when Landry Jones quarterbacked, and it was kind of a close game in Pittsburgh,
mm-hmm.
Harrison wasn't starting. Dupree was still on the PUP list, and Ryan Shazier was out with an injury. So that's 3 of their 4 linebackers. And Lawrence Timmons was covering Julian Edelman, and that was a mismatch. So you're going to see an entirely different defense this time around.
Yeah, it's amazing how the pass rush has heated up, actually. In the first seven games, it looks like Pittsburgh had zero sacks four times, including against New England. Since that point, they've been one of the hotter pass rushing units in football, and I'd imagine that's going to have to be a huge key Sunday, obviously, against the powerful Patriots and Brady. Jim, let's just wrap up on the back end. Do you think the youngsters, there have been some changes back there, too, the likes of Artie Burns and in the kid out of Maryland, whose name I always forget, Sean Davis, I believe. Are those guys ready for the challenge that's going to be in front of them Sunday?
Well, that's your huge question mark. That's that's the big one. Sean Davis missing practice, missing some of practice today. Okay. He's had a shoulder injury. He didn't play the last time out. Even if he does play, he's a rookie. Artie Burns a rookie, but Artie Burns is unflappable. You don't think he's a rookie. He forgets his mistakes. He doesn't dwell on his mistakes. He's got the speed. So he is not too much of a concern, but well, rookies make mistakes back there, and that's your biggest question mark.
All right, it's going to be a lot of fun. Jim, I've already taken too much of your time. I am going to put you on the spot, and if you pass, that's okay. I don't know at what point in the week you make your picks. Are you ready to do it yet? Do you have a feeling which way this thing goes Sunday?
Sure. Well, you know, I've been covering this team since 1995. I've seen the I was in Gillette Stadium when Anthony Smith had guaranteed a win. I've seen 55 points put up on them. I've seen Tom Brady throw 23 consecutive passes in one game. I do not have a good feeling. I am old Pittsburgh. I see the Brady, the Patriots, the Gillette Stadium, and I say loss immediately. But I talk to these young guys. They don't know anything about that. Stephon Tua, Dave DeCastro. They don't know any of this stuff. Ben does. Ben calls it the dragon's lair. He understands this. He knows too much. He is frightened like me. But these other guys don't, and they're on a 9-game win streak, and they've won how many close games in a row? They've gotten better on the road. I'm still going to pick the Patriots to win by 3. I'll go as far as to say the Steelers will cover, and they have a threat of an upset. They think they can do it. But I am just, I've seen too much. I know too much.
Right.
I have to go with the Patriots just to be balanced and fair as I can with this prediction.
Yeah, so, it makes a lot of sense.
I don't know the score. I would imagine over 50. I'll just say 30-27 in a real great game.
All right, Patriots. Well, that'll be good. As long as we get a great game, that'll be a departure from most of these playoffs. So, all right, Jim, again, I'm so appreciative of the time. I know I've went over a little bit. The great Jim Wexel, find his work at Steel City Insider, also on ProFootballWeekly.com, and on Twitter, at Jim Wexel. Jim, it's always a pleasure. I hope you have fun out there Sunday, okay?
Well, you're too kind, but thanks. Thank you very much for having me. Take care.
The pleasure's ours. We'll do it again soon. That is Jim Wexel, and again, find his work over at Steel City Insider and also at ProFootballWeekly.com.
All right, I hope you enjoyed that chat with Jim as much as I did. He is such a wealth of knowledge on the Steelers and a good guy to boot. So always fun having him on the podcast, much like our final guest today, Christopher Price of WEEI. And again, another frequent contributor to Pro Football Weekly. Like Jim, he has a piece up at the site this week about a couple of keys for New England as it gets ready to host yet another title game. And as Bill Belichick and Tom Brady look to make that 7th Super Bowl appearance together, let's see what Christopher Price is thinking about what's going on with the Patriots ahead of Sunday's meeting with the Steelers.
Talking a little bit of Patriots and Steelers, for our listeners who don't know, Christopher Price covers the Patriots for WEEI and is also a frequent contributor at ProFootballWeekly.com. His latest piece is up at the site now, and I thought we'd dig in a little bit, Chris. I know a lot of talk this week about, at least out of Pittsburgh, about bulletin board material from Antonio Brown. I'm guessing in Foxborough they're a little more concerned about Tom Brady's protection, particularly the interior.
Yeah, they're a little bit more buttoned up. I think the key is, and I mentioned this in the story, is that the Steelers would be wise to take a page from what the Texans did. Now I understand that it's one thing to talk about a blueprint for defeating the Patriots, another thing to put it into motion. But when you look at what Houston was able to do with the ability to get pressure on Tom Brady up the middle with the minimum amount of rushers, they moved some guys around a little bit. They moved Clowney around a little bit. They moved Merciless around a little bit. And they were able to make Tom Brady a little bit uncomfortable. I think if Pittsburgh is able to do something similar to what Houston was able to do. That is to say, maybe move the likes of Bud Dupree or someone else inside, and if they're able to generate consistent pressure on Brady, again, with a minimum number of rushers, I think that would certainly bode well for what Pittsburgh wants to do defensively. So it's going to be fascinating. And then, of course, you get the chess match aspect of the whole thing with the Patriots trying to counter that with maybe a little bit more of a heavy set, working fullbacks, working Deion Lewis in there, primarily as blitz pickups. So the chess match aspect of it is going to be fascinating to see, because these two teams, there's not a whole lot that they can do to surprise each other.
Right, and they've obviously met once already this season, as you said in your piece, 8 out of the past 10 years. And Chris, let me ask you, prior to Romeo Crennel and the Texans defense having some success against Brady, obviously we all know it wasn't enough. We know what the outcome was like. Any other kind of shades of last year in Denver in the way that Wade Phillips and Von Miller and Derek Wolfe and the rest of those guys were able to kind of get after Brady? It's kind of what it reminded me of a little bit.
Yeah, and that's fair. I think one of the keys at the same time, we can talk about being able to generate pressure on Brady, but one of the things that Denver was able to do last year was they have really good man matchup corners. And, you know, guys like Talib and Harris. And I don't know if the Pittsburgh corners have the same ability to match up man to man and get physical with some of these guys. I think that, you know, it really is a domino effect. It really is a team defense aspect of this whole thing, in that you can do your due diligence when it comes to getting after Brady, but you also have to have the ability on the back end to be able to be disruptive in the game when it comes to a lot of those timing elements. We saw that from Denver last year. Von Miller was great in terms of getting after Tom Brady, and they were also able to jam those guys at the line and disrupt a lot of those patterns. I don't know if Pittsburgh has the ability on the back end, even if they decide to shake things up front. I don't know if they have the ability at the back end to kind of maintain that discipline defensively and slow up guys like Julian Edelman, like Chris Hogan, like Danny Amendola, and Malcolm Mitchell.
Yeah, that's a great point by you. No one's going to mistake, Artie Burns and Ross Cockrell and William Gay, obviously, for Chris Harris and Aqib Talib and the rest of that crew. So a good point by you. We're chatting with Christopher Price. Find him on Twitter at CPriceNFL. Find his work at WEEI and also ProFootballWeekly.com. And Chris, you also had mentioned in your piece kind of the Deion Lewis effect and the way he has taken a greater role as the latter part of the season wore on and into the playoffs. Do you think last week was game plan specific? We saw Lewis get the start over Blunt. He out-touched him 15-8. Or is that the way that this Patriots offense is kind of evolving as Lewis has gotten healthier?
I think some of it was game plan specific, and I also think some of it was health-related. I think that Deion Lewis was healthy. LeGarrette Blunt was not. I think that when I say we, I mean us in the media, kind of undersold a little bit of the fact that LeGarrette Blunt was sick. LeGarrette Blunt had a cold and flu. Mm-hmm. He talked to us a little bit yesterday, and he was clearly still kind of getting over the after effects. I think he was in a bit of a NyQuil haze when he talked to us. So you see what he can bring to the field. But, yeah, the Lewis thing is fascinating because Lewis is able to put pressure on opposing defenses on a number of different ways. We really didn't see him a lot in the passing game on Saturday night, but he's taken over more of those between-the-tackles touches over the second half of the season and last week against the Texans. So he's a very, very different kind of running back than LeGarrette Blunt is, in that he's more of a make-you-miss guy as opposed to that straight-ahead hammer running style that LeGarrette Blunt features. And I think for a Pittsburgh team that is preparing for the likes of Blunt and preparing for the likes of a guy who ran for over 100 yards the first time these two teams met, I think Deion Lewis can offer a little bit of a different option. It might confuse him just a little bit.
You know, it was such a fascinating game for Lewis. Obviously, super explosive with the scores, but he also had a couple mishaps, a couple fumbles, I believe. Was he hard on himself after that one, despite, you know, kind of the great highs, but also the low lows after that one?
He was hard on himself. We asked him afterward, we said, is this the best game he's ever had? Obviously, focusing on the three touchdowns. He says, no, this is one of the worst games I ever had because I fumbled the ball twice. We were able to get it back once, so that's kind of a foolish question.
Yeah.
The other thing, too, Arthur, and it's really interesting that you bring this up, because here in Foxborough yesterday, it's a rainy, miserable, cold, wet day, and they were practicing outside. In full view of the media, Bill Belichick is walking up and down as people are doing stretching and kind of getting ready for practice. We only get like a 10-minute view of practice, but I believe Bill made it a point to say, good day for ball security, guys. Right, Deion? And kind of looked over to Lewis. And so it's clear that ball security is going to be a priority for everyone. It is each and every week, but especially the case for a guy like Lewis going up against the Steelers.
Yeah, that is interesting. And, you know, an aggressive Steelers defense, and I know that'll be a major point of emphasis, as you mentioned. Let's quickly look at the other side of the ball. What do you think about Malcolm Butler versus Antonio Brown? It sounds like Butler's kind of downplayed that matchup this week, but when you look at the numbers, it seems like he is a lot more prevalent playing kind of a star coverage role when he goes up against Brown as opposed to maybe some other teams' number ones.
Yeah, and it's interesting, too, and this is something that has come up over the last couple of days. You go back and you look at how the Patriots have utilized Malcolm Butler going up against some of the leading wide receivers. More often than not, the Patriots have used him this year against number two guys, and they've used Logan Ryan against number one. But over the last two times, dating back to the start of the 2015 season, they've used Malcolm Butler and Antonio Brown. And so I think that the Patriots like what they see when they see that matchup. But the bottom line for me, when you're talking about Malcolm Butler, I've covered this team since 2001. I don't know if I've ever seen anyone compete on a play-to-play basis quite like Malcolm Butler. He plays every single snap like it's going to be his last. It's going to be his last in the NFL. That like rent and food are on the line. The intensity that he brings each and every snap is really quite something. And so, a potential matchup between Antonio Brown, Malcolm Butler, it's going to be an awful lot of fun on Sunday night.
Yeah, I can't wait to see it. And Butler obviously playing for a lot. He has somehow managed to even pick his game up a notch and has been really impressive. But let's not discount what Logan Ryan has done. I thought he was one of the more impressive players on the field a week ago. Christopher, it's not really part of Sunday's evaluation, but is Logan Ryan a guy that they're going to go out of their way to make sure they retain after the season, do you think?
The Patriots have a lot of contractual issues going into this offseason. Dante Hightower, Martellus Bennett, Jabal Sheard, LeGarrette Blount. I think Logan Ryan is going to get paid. I don't think he's the kind of guy who's going to say command the franchise tag, but I think he's going to land himself a sizable contract. And quite frankly, based on his play over the last year plus, I think he's earned it. I think he's done a very good job as a really good complementary piece of this defense, working alongside the likes of Malcolm Butler as well as Darrelle Revis here a couple of years ago. I think he's going to get paid. I don't know if the Patriots are going to be the one who end up paying him because, again, they do have so many priorities right now heading into this offseason. But I think he has earned the right to land a big contract this offseason.
Spending just a couple more minutes here with Christopher Price, and I have to ask, Bill Belichick has a reputation, Bill Belichick, Matt Patricia, for ensuring that the opposition's best players don't beat them. We talked a little bit about Antonio Brown likely against Malcolm Butler, maybe Logan Ryan, we'll wait and see. What about Le'Veon Bell? I don't think anyone can stop him right now, but who are kind of the main, the key factors that are going to try and slow maybe the hottest player on the planet that's not playing quarterback?
It's going to be three guys, really. Dante Hightower is the Patriots, probably the Patriots' best run stopper. You're also going to get a heavy dose of Malcolm Brown as well as Alan Branch. I think that, as you mentioned, Arthur, it's the priority each and every week for the Patriots to say, all right, what is the number one offensive option over there? And we want to try and take it away and make them go to their number two or number three and make them a little bit uncomfortable. It's clear, even though Antonio Brown is what he is able to put up phenomenal numbers week after week, the focus this week is going to be on Le'Veon Bell. Earlier in the season, when we asked Bill Belichick for his thoughts on Le'Veon Bell, the first three words out of his mouth were, oh my God. And so that should tell you a little bit of what he thinks the ability of a guy like Bell. And so he is going to be the priority. And again, it's going to be about the guys up front. It's going to be about guys like Alan Branch, who's really had an underrated year as part of the Patriots defensive front. Malcolm Brown, secondary defensive tackle, as well as their number one run stopper, Dante Hightower. Something to look for, too. The Patriots have kind of cycled through a group of linebackers over the second half of the season, playing alongside Hightower. Group that includes Landon Roberts, Kyle Van Noy, and Shea McClellan. Roberts is probably the best run stopper of the three. We saw an awful lot of him on Saturday night, designed obviously to try and take away Lamar Miller. I wouldn't be surprised to see a Landon Roberts get the bulk of those snaps next to Dante Hightower as the Patriots try and do whatever they can do to try and slow down Le'Veon Bell.
And that's been fascinating, the way that they have tried to kind of rejuvenate some former high-round picks. Roberts sort of on the other end of the spectrum as the rookie young guy, but that's been sort of fun to watch. And, Christopher, I guess on the way out, I don't know if it's too early in the week or if you have a good feeling, if you're ready to make a pick on this game. I'll put you on the spot. If you're not, though, I understand, but I always like to ask the guests if they have a feeling, if they're leaning one way.
I think New England ends up winning this thing. I think that Pittsburgh all year long has been positioned as the team that, you know, has the best chance to come into Foxborough and make the Patriots a little bit uncomfortable, and I think they have that capability. But I don't think in the end it's going to be enough. I think Pittsburgh's going to put some points on the board, but I think New England's going to end up winning this thing. I'm going to say by a touchdown. Playing at home is huge for this group for a handful of reasons, not the least of which the margin for error is noticeably slimmer ever since the Rob Gronkowski injury. And I think that, you know, they were completely aware of that coming down the stretch. They weren't about to let home field get away from them for a second straight year. And that attitude, that approach, that level of intensity that they displayed late in the regular season, going into the postseason, I think that's going to serve them very well, and it's going to be enough to take them over the top on Sunday night.
All right, terrific stuff. I'm Christopher Price. You can find his work on Twitter, CPriceNFL, also, of course, at WEEI and at ProFootballWeekly.com. And thank you so much. This was such a pleasure. I know you got open locker room to get to, but enjoy the game Sunday, and let's do it again soon. Okay, Christopher?
Definitely. We'll talk again soon, Arthur. Take care.
All right. Thank you very much. That is Christopher Price.
And there you have it, your AFC Conference Championship preview. And one more thank you to all my wonderful guests today, Wes Hodkowitz of Packers.com, Aaron Freeman of Locked On Falcons, Jim Wexel, of course, of Steel City Insider, and Christopher Price of WEEI. Really appreciate all those guys taking time out of what I know is even busier than usual schedules this week to join the Pro Football Weekly podcast and to help us all wrap our head around what hopefully should be a really fun weekend of football. One more reminder before I bid you guys a farewell, and I will just tell you a bit of a tease. If you want our picks, mine and Kevin's and Hub's, you got to go to ProFootballWeekly.com to check them out. If you want the analysis anyway, you got to go to PFW.com. I will tell you, I'm going with the chalk this week. I think both home teams, I anticipate two good games, but I do think that the home teams hold serve. Matt Ryan finds his way to his first Super Bowl again. Tom Brady, Bill Belichick looking for number 7. So if you want a little bit more of my reasoning and a score along, of course, with Kevin and Hubs, more importantly, make sure you check out ProFootballWeekly.com today. We'll have all of that up there on Friday. And one last reminder, head to iTunes, please, if you haven't done so already. Subscribe to the Pro Football Weekly podcast. Leave us a like, a comment, a share while you are there. And one more thank you to you guys, because you're the ones that make this podcast go. I'm appreciative as always, and we'll look forward to breaking down these great games and doing all kinds of fun Super Bowl primers starting next week at the Pro Football Weekly podcast. I hope you have an awesome weekend and enjoy the action.